This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. Welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Good morning, Dean. I'm great. Boy, what a difference a day makes. I went from like 30 degrees at my place. We're down to like 15 right now, which is actually perfect garden working weather.
Yeah, we were kind of wondering the same thing. We were, Gail and I have the weekend off together, and we were planning to do some gardening, and we thought the same thing, that it's actually really nice. And I remember something that the tattooed gardener said a couple of weeks ago. He said he really loves gardening in the rain.
Right. Yeah, well, is it raining at your place today?
No, it's threatening to rain. It says that it's coming, but I never kind of thought of that. He says he quite likes it.
Well, you know what? I like shopping at garden centers in the rain. I guess nobody else is there.
I have a quick question for you. We have, you know, like many people do, like a black back patio set. And of course, we've really seen a lot of the yellow pollen on there. And we wondered if it's a little bit later this year, or it just seemed to us that, I don't know, is it right on cue?
Everything's a bit early this year. You know, everything's a bit ahead of schedule. But I think the pollen levels have been higher than average. I guess the Weather Network could tell us that for sure, because they definitely do measure that sort of thing. But I have never experienced allergies that I know of. And yet this year I have been sneezing. And I think it is a bit connected to all the fuzz. Like, my daughter sent me a photo. She was out for a walk in a Toronto ravine a few days ago, and there's piles of cottonwood trees have spewed out their seeds. And of course, they're called cottonwoods because each seed is just this bundle of fuzz. And there was just piles of it. She said it's like you're tripping over these cottonwood seeds. They're clouds all over the ground. And she said her and her friend were just coughing their little lungs out. She said, "Do you think it's connected to all this fuzz all around me?" I'm like, "Oh, maybe." I mean, pollen is very irritating to the mucous membranes. We know that.
Yeah. I also don't really react to it. There was a time when I did, but I think I outgrew whatever allergies I had. But wow, we noticed we can wipe that table and the cloth is all yellow.
Yeah, me too. Exactly. And I'm doing it every day, it seems like. Yeah. So listen, a couple quick announcements before we go any further. Number one, the Burlington Horticultural Society meeting this June the 12th, 6:30 p.m., please join in at 6:30 for the Strawberry Social. I love those. Strawberry Social. And Margaret Larson will be speaking on magnificent monarchs. They meet at the Burlington Senior Center, 2285 New Street in Burlington. So everyone is welcome to that. Number two, the Richmond Hill Garden and Hort Society is doing a worm casting sale, similar to what the Riverdale Hort Society was doing. And this is their last date for pickup, Saturday, June 15th, just in time for Dad's Day. So consider a bag of worm castings for your dad. It doesn't get better than that. For ordering and more information, go to richmondhillgardensociety.org. And one more, and this one sounds really interesting, because one of the big trends in indoor gardening and indoor plants the last few years has been all about the succulents and the cacti, particularly the young. Yeah, see, you're waving your hand. Yeah, and not just old folks like me, or, you know, gardeners like me, but a lot of the young folks, I think they just find them so easy and so structural and so stunning sometimes. So what I'm going to suggest is everybody gets themselves to the Toronto Cactus and Succulent Society meeting. It's on Sunday, June the 16th. It's at the Toronto Botanical Gardens from 10 until 4. They have an annual show and sale. So they're going to have some really interesting specimens for sale that will not just be your regular jade plants. And it's quite a interesting group because they're a very mixed group. So 777 Lawrence Avenue East, and enjoy what's for sale and enjoy some of the really smart people that attend this particular group.
Okie dokie. Okay, so we do have to go to break, but before we do that, I'm going to give the phone numbers out. We'd love for you to give us a call, 416-360-0740. That's the number you use if you live in Toronto, but if you live anywhere outside Toronto in the province of Ontario, use this number, 1-866-740-4740. Those are the garden wings, which I will give you. If you are a first-time caller, you just need to let Ashy know. And we want you to call often. We want you to call early. And please, one question per call. Okay, we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, we are back here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, and we are well into June now. So, my goodness, it's things are popping up all over the place. I don't know what is happening. Before we go to our first caller, what's the latest thing coming up in your garden, Charlie?
Weeds.
Yeah, fair enough.
Everything is popping up, and the weeds are loving the warmth that we were just having, though it's cooled a bit now. But the rain has been a godsend at my place. I'm just thrilled to bits that we had a couple of nice days of rain there. Things have greened up a bit, but it's get out there after the show and grab those weeds that are taking advantage of that beautiful moisture.
Beautiful. Okay, so we have a handful of callers on the line. We're going to go to our first right now. We have Jean from Newmarket. Welcome to The Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning.
Morning.
Charlie, I am your self-acclaimed fan president. I just think you're incredible. Now, my question is, for years I have had a finch feeder, no problems. But this year, a red-winged blackbird has decided to terrorize. What do I do?
Well, is the red-winged blackbird actually able to get food out of the feeder?
Well, he's picking at it, and then, of course, he's taking it out of the tray at the bottom, but he's doing a little both.
Yeah. You know what? It would be nice if we could just feed the birds we love and not feed the birds we don't love. The grackles, the red-winged blackbirds, the mourning doves, or pigeons, whatever the case may be. Some of them we just don't love feeding, but it's very, very hard. You were saying, Dean, that you've been changing your feed to try and control the birds.
Yeah, I've gone completely to safflower seed recently because the grackles and the red-winged blackbirds do not like it. So that has been a big help. But the other thing I would recommend, Gene, is that you get a finch feeder that does not have a tray on the bottom, because the finches can still land on the perches, but the red-winged blackbirds will have trouble dealing with that.
That's true. Or the other great one is the finch feeder with the cage around it. So the little finches can get in and happily sit there and munch. But it's funny to watch the big birds try and stick their heads in the cage and try and reach the food, and they can't. So that either of those suggestions might work for you, Gene.
Thank you very much. And I am a frequent flyer. I am be calling back. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Gene. Good to hear
you. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Judy on the line from Stratford. Welcome to The Garden Show, Judy.
Good morning. I'm having problems with my yellow beans. I got Mackenzie seeds and I soaked them overnight, and only about 6 of the seeds came up. But then when I watered them afterwards, like every other day or so, and then I went out, and now the beans, there's no leaf left to it. It's just like mesh. What ate them? What do I do?
What ate them? You know, it's hard to say exactly what ate them, but the stems are still there, but the first set of leaves are gone. Like they're called the seed leaves, the little oval leaves, or the next set is gone.
The first ones are gone. There's no other leaves on it now, and it's just like a mesh.
Yeah. Well, okay, so remember that if the stem is still there and the stem is green, it is still alive. What I would try and do is try and protect what's there from cutworms or earwigs or whoever's out there, you know, chewing on your beans. So a couple of ways to protect. Probably the easiest way to protect is to get a hold of something called diatomaceous earth.
Okay.
So it's under many different brand names, but it's a white powder. It looks to us like talcum powder, but it's to an insect, they're like shards of glass. They are actually from diatoms, which is why it's called diatomaceous earth. And so it's these shards of glass make it very, very dangerous for little tiny insects to crawl through because it lacerates their bodies and it's not at all toxic to anything else, ourselves included. So I would put a little circle of that between rain, because obviously when it rains, you'll have to reapply.
Right.
I would try something like that for now around the plants, just as a collar idea to protect them till they get a little bigger, a little stronger. You could also pop a couple more seeds into the ground near where, you know, where you wanted them and where you've already planted them. And you don't need to soak. You shouldn't need to soak them overnight.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day. Yeah. Thanks so much, Judy. I'm going to give the numbers out again, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. Charlie, before we go to our next caller, can we do a little update? We were talking about boxwood before the show started today, and we had a lot of conversation about that last week on the show.
We did, and I'm sure that there are people still listening and kind of wondering, what do I do now? Because we had a number of callers. So one of the things I mentioned last week was boxwood replacements. If your boxwood are being eaten by the box tree moths and you haven't been able to control that, or your boxwood are in decline because of boxwood blight, which is a fungal disease, and there's no cure for it, then you're going to be ripping out your boxwood and you are not replacing again with boxwood because you're just going to have the same issues again. So I did a few quick searches on the web, and I just wanted to let people know a couple of good sites I found. These are replacement ideas for boxwood, where people have formal hedges or even just that idea, that line of evergreens. And interesting, the University of Georgia, now remember, what they grow in Georgia, we can't always grow here. But if you Google University of Georgia, think outside the boxwood, you will find quite an interesting list of plants. Like, they've got at least 30 or 40 suggestions for boxwood replacements. Now, again, they won't all grow here, so, you know, be careful with where you go with that as well. Proven winners, and most of us who have been in a garden center in the last 10 years have seen those white pots, shrubs and perennials growing in white pots with a big PW written on the pot. Proven Winners is a big company, grows very good quality plants, has a very good website. So go to the Proven Winners website, and again, you're going to look for alternatives to boxwood, because they do, again, have some great photos and suggestions. Quickly, some of the suggestions include Inkberry Holly. Now, last week, Michael, who called in from Etobicoke, and he's been struggling with boxwood issues for years, he was not super happy with some of the replacement ideas. So if he's listening right now, don't yell at the radio. I know, these are not boxwood. They are just suggestions for replacements. So Inkberry Holly, there's one called Gem Box. There's another one called Strong Box. Both have been pred very specifically to look and be boxwood replacements. A couple of thuya or cedars out there. One is called Tater Tot, cute name, Tater Tots, because it's tiny, or not super tiny, but it's a small, dense cedar, globe cedar. And one that's even smaller is called Anna's Magic Ball. And so that's a proven winner, Anna's Magic Ball. So tiny, tiny, dense little cedars that you can prune any way you want, and from a distance should look just like a boxwood. And one more would be the yews. Taxus is the proper name. The yew that is, again, being selected as a boxwood replacement is called Stonehenge Dark Druid. So Stonehenge Dark Druid. So there's some suggestions for, you know, not boxwood, but maybe will work for your boxwood replacements.
Okay, sounds great and helpful for all those people who are, my goodness, just so wounded. You know, if you have all those, we were having callers last week that had hundreds of them on their property and have had them for decades and just don't know what to to do. So very tragic. Yes, indeed. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Eva on the line from Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Eva. Hey there, Eva, you there?
Yeah, morning. Hello?
Morning.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hi there, what's going on?
Yeah, we're all listening.
Hello?
We're there, Eva. Fire away with your question.
I have a plum tree, 2 years old, and on the bottom of it, it started growing a couple of shoots. Last year, I cut them off. This year, I have a few on the bottom right on the stem growing, and they're almost 1 meter high. What should I do? Should I cut them off again, leave them, or what should I do?
Okay, so when any of your trees, any kind of tree, but particularly fruit trees, grow shoots at the bottom, what we call suckers, from the bottom, just below the soil level of your trees, those shoots are growing from the root. And in the case of fruit trees, that is the rootstock. So you definitely do not want those growing. And what you do want to do is pull the soil away with a trowel or your fingers. Follow that little sucker right down with a pair of gloves on. Do not cut it off. Break it off. It's one of the few times we don't use pruners. If you cut them, you will get more. If you break them, you will get no more at all. So you've got to follow where it's growing from. You got to break them off. And the smaller they are, the easier they're going to break off. So if they're very tall, then yes, you're just going to have to still go down as deep as you can, find where they're coming from. If you can't break them, at least cut them from where they're growing from. Okay? Okay.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Even. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Good luck with that. I guess when that happens, you say, oh, shoot.
Or sucker.
Oh, the fun we have here on the Garden Show.
Gardening is fun. Trust me.
It looks like is our next caller
Alan.
Alan, okay, yeah, so we're going to our next caller, which is Alan in Thornhill. Okay, welcome to the Garden Show, Alan.
Good morning, everyone, ladies and gentlemen. My first-time caller.
Hey, you're a first-time caller. There you go. Woo! Got your garden wings for you there, Alan.
I have mushrooms growing in my beautiful lawn. I want to know why.
You know why? Because under your lawn, where those mushrooms are growing, something is decomposing.
What does that mean?
So it could be there was a tree there, and the tree came down, and the roots are still underground.
Mushrooms, wow.
That's what mushrooms do. That's their job. They decompose stuff.
So I can't do nothing, right? Just dig it out and...
Just wait. Eventually, they will stop. What I try and do, it was kind of handy when I had a young son in the family who was up early every morning, and he loved the idea of being a golfer. So he would go out and practice his golf swing on any mushrooms that were coming up in the lawn. And the earlier you do it in the morning, the better, because you want to get them before the little toadstools open and spores are spread. You want them still closed, and you just knock their heads off. And that, I mean, yeah, the day will go on, they'll be fine. The next morning, the more will have grown likely. But if you just sort of stay on it, eventually they will stop. But don't be overly concerned. It's completely normal.
Clovers. Clover.
Pardon?
What do I do with clover? How do you get rid of it?
Enjoy it. Enjoy your clover. And that's two questions. So I know your first-time caller. You'll have to call back and make yourself a second-time caller.
There you go. Thanks for the call there, Alan. Don't be a stranger. And we're going to go now to our next caller, which is Joe, who's also a first-time caller from Valcaran. Welcome to the Garden Show, Joe. How are you?
Great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Did I say the name of your town correctly?
Yes, it's just outside of Sudbury.
Okay.
Oh, lovely.
Valcaran.
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to give you a garden wings. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Welcome.
I'm curious what your question is, Joe.
Well, we bought a lilac bush a couple of years ago and planted it, and it's doing well. It's growing. And I have two questions. It hasn't produced any blooms yet. I was wondering when it was going to produce blooms.
Okay, if it's when lilacs produce blooms in the spring, so this was an early spring. I sure I imagine even for you, you're a little ahead of schedule up in Sudbury. I would think it would be blooming right about now. Do you know what kind of lilac you purchased?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay. You don't see any evidence of any buds on it at all, on the tips, little round ball-type buds?
No, I haven't seen anything yet.
Have you done any pruning on it whatsoever?
No pruning.
Okay, so don't. Don't prune it. Okay. If you're going to prune it, you will do it. So my lilac did its, most lilacs here in Southern Ontario have done their big flush of the bloom. The lilac I have on my garden is a, what we would call an ever-blooming lilac. It's called Bloomerang. So it did its first flush of blooms, and now it's going to keep blooming all summer. Most lilacs only bloom once. So if you're going to prune them after they bloom, and then you leave them alone till the following year. It might just be a case of it being young and still getting established if it's only been in for 2 years.
Okay. The lilacs in the area are all blooming now.
Okay, so that makes sense. So if you got lots of sun and you got it in well-drained soil and if you, you know, given it good soil when you planted it,
we did for sure, and but it is, there's a lot of tall trees around, so maybe it's not getting enough sun.
Yeah, that's possible. They do like full sun and good air circulation as well. Otherwise, they tend to get mildewy. So yeah maybe if you have a sunnier spot while it's still young, you might want to consider moving it to a brighter spot, or be patient. You will get blooms eventually, I'm sure.
Okay.
Okay.
My second question is, it's got little bugs.
So, Joe, if we actually, it's only one question per call because we have a lot of callers on the line. So you'll have to call back, okay?
Thanks very much.
So I have to run to the next call now. Thank you so much for calling. We're now going to go to Jean in Newmarket. Welcome to the Garden
Show,
Jean.
Welcome back.
Yes, because Jean, you called and you called back so that you get the blue ribbon today.
Follow the rules.
Thank you very much. I was given a plant. It's a tropical. It's got a three stems, and then very much like a palm on the top. But on the around the base of it, there was is an ivy, and they're both very healthy. Can I leave the ivy around the bottom of the at the base of the pot, or do I have to take that out because of the tropical?
Well, no, because most ivies are tropical originally. This was like a gift plant, or like this is like a design pot, like a multi-plants in one pot as a beautiful combination? Is that what's going on there?
No, not when I got it. When I got it is in about 6-inch pot, and it only has the one tropical and then the ivy growing around. I'd love to leave it.
Hmm. I would leave it. I would just move the whole thing up to, if it's getting too big for the 6-inch pot, roots are coming out the bottom, I would move the whole thing up to an 8-inch pot or 10 at the biggest. Unless you just don't like the look of the ivy, but you can certainly trim the ivy, keep it under control, because the ivies do tend to be quite brutish in their growth habit, and they like to take over. So, you know, make sure that the palm is happy and it's being well cared for, and just keep the ivy under control, or pull the whole thing out of the pot, pull the plants apart, and pot them up separately. It's up to you.
Thank you very much. I'm coming back.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Jean.
The numbers once again are 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. Another thing that I should mention also is that if you have a question that you want to send Charlie during the week that we can use on the show that maybe is more picture related, you can always email her. Her email is c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Okay. We are going now to John, who's from Mississauga. Welcome to the Garden Show, John.
Welcome back, John.
Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Charlie. My usual fruit trees, but this time it's... a little while ago, I got some bombonella trees, which I gave to a nursery. So I got one for my daughter and two for my grandson. Now, The two that I'm talking about, I'm referring, Charlie, is they're growing. I mean, they're nice. They even have fruit this year. Nice. But the main stem, the main branch, is getting so tall, right? It's at least right now, it's at least, I say, what, 14 feet? Can I cut that main branch that's going up?
Yeah, you can. So remember, John, when it comes to fruit trees, there's two ways to deal with them. One way is be the farmer and prune your tree to maximize your harvest. So, and also make it easy for the harvest, right? So, you know, you can reach up and harvest the fruit without getting a cherry picker into the backyard. So that's what a farmer would do, an orchardist. However, a homeowner that's growing trees strictly for ornamental purposes, including fruit trees, would prune for the beauty of the tree. So the shape of the tree, the balance of the tree, and gathering the fruit would not be the highest priority whatsoever. So I know you and your fruit trees, and I know you and your bambinellas. So yes, I suggest, yes, you bring it's the terminal shoot. So when you bring that down, and you will want to take off whatever, a foot or two or more,
yes,
you're going to get a lot more width out of that tree. They're going to get a lot wider, and you're going to have to, you know, again, prune to be able to access the fruit as the tree gets wider and wider.
Yeah, so I can do that, because like I said, but the old ones, the ones that I have since in the 70s, that they're huge, right? So like you said, I want them to get wider instead of taller, so I can do it. That's my question. I can do that.
You can. You know, anytime you're driving in the fruit part of Ontario, like down Grimsby Way and, you know, down towards Beamsville, and you see all the cherry trees and the peaches and all the fruit trees, look at them. They're all designed, pruned low to be easy to access the fruit and wide. So, and like almost like umbrellas, they've been pruned to grow like that to maximize fruit and obviously efficiency as well. So don't hesitate.
Okay. Thanks, okay. Charlie. Thanks, Dean. Have a good one. Thanks,
John. You too. Enjoy. You as well. Okay. You know what? Let's go to our next break. We'll go to a quick break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, before we go to our next caller, which is another first-time caller, I got an email regarding Judy, who called a little earlier from Stratford, I think it was she was calling from, yeah. And it's from Gloria in Porcupine, Ontario. And she says that she had the same problem. This is in reference to starlings and grackles.
It was in reference to beans.
That's right. It was almost like a combination of two callers' questions. She said, I had the same problem for several years at my community garden, and she caught the starlings and the grackles right there eating the leaves. Mm-hmm. So there you go, I guess, because they're nice and tender. She says, now I use row covers until the plants have about four sets of leaves and are about 5 inches tall. And I'm guessing, Charlie, that would be because they're not as succulent anymore.
Well, and they're stronger. You know, take a chunk out of a leaf when you've already got five leaves, you're okay. But when you only have one leaf and somebody takes a chunk out of it, things get tough. So, no, really good suggestion. So hopefully Judy is still listening. Row covers, early in the season, many people will use as a protection. We have to take the row covers off, though, because pollination is required and insects need to do it, and the row covers stop the insects.
Okie dokie. Okay. So let's go to our next caller, who, again, is a first-time caller. We have Gerard on the line from Welland. Welcome to The Garden Show, Gerard.
Hello.
Hi. Morning.
Hear your garden wings, my friend.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. And thanks for being a first-time caller. What do you got for Charlie?
My mom has a thing with orchids. They're beautiful, fine, lovely, but I find when the orchid flowers dies, you're just stuck with two green leaves or whatever. Yeah. Is there a way that you could steroid it or whatnot to rebloom again?
Well, what I find I mean, number one, orchid flowers last a very long time. Like they last for months. If you can maintain the right moisture levels and bright indirect light for months and months. Once the blooms have shriveled and dropped, I never cut the green flower stem immediately. I wait, because what sometimes happens is another shoot will come off the flower stem and more buds will form. So you can actually have an orchid that just blooms nonstop, given the right... Then again, a fertilizer should always be part of your orchid care. So give the plant the right conditions, the optimal inputs, and you'll find that they will bloom pretty well nonstop. But when the green stem, if it just starts to turn brown and shrivel up and the brown descends from the tip down to the leaves, you do cut that out, remove it, carry on, and hopefully, you know, soon more flower stems will start to grow. But yeah, they sometimes they are just green leaves. They're just green plants, but they're still very attractive and shiny, and nothing wrong with, you know, having them around. They do provide a lot of oxygen for us.
Oh, oxygen, because, okay, 1 year I did this, and I got a little bit of trouble. I took the plant, and I put it in the flower bed outside, and my mom said, what the heck are you doing, because it doesn't go with dirt, which I did not know. It died right away.
Yeah.
I learned that once. Never do that again, but okay, so, all right.
I know people that will take their orchids from inside the house and then they will hang them in trees for the summer. So they get the shade from the tree. They get that beautiful high humidity and warmth outside. They get watered either with a hose or a mister, but yeah, never in the ground. And we don't want them in full sun. They'll just shrivel up and die if it's full sun.
That's what it did.
Okay, thanks.
All plants live in dirt. So I said, why not give it a shot?
No, not those ones. Okay, Gerard, listen, thanks for being a first-time caller. Don't be a stranger, okay? Give us a call again another time.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to go now to our next caller, who is calling from Barrie, and we've got Otance on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Otance.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Morning.
What question you got for Charlie there, my friend?
Well, back in 2016, I bought a stick of a hibiscus plant from Barbados, and it's been doing really well, and even in the winter when I bring it in, it's flowering in the house, but this year, nothing. I just wonder if there's a problem or if it's in. Okay, no more.
Okay, so if it's been a number of years, then sometimes hibiscus are vigorous plants. I would check, make sure it's in a pot that has drainage holes. Check the drainage hole. See if you see a lot of roots coming out, because hibiscus grow very vigorous root systems. And sometimes one of the best things you can do is pull it out of the pot. You know, if you like the pot it's in, just pull it out, saw off some roots, get some fresh soil, fresh potting mix, moist, back into the pot, put the plant back into the same pot with a smaller root ball with that fresh soil, and it'll just go boom, and it'll grow a bunch of leaves and flowers as a result of that treatment.
Okay.
Yeah, is it okay to have it outside right now, or is it still a little early now?
Oh, I'd say you're probably very safe to have it outside now, but start it in a shady spot and then get it into full sun.
Okay.
Okay, and you let us know. Call us back in a few weeks. Let us know how that goes. Okay, Otance? Thanks so much for the call. We're going to go right now to Jean in Newmarket.
She's breaking the record.
She is. Welcome back to the Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning. First, I want to say it is a privilege to hear you and John talk. Two seasoned professionals. Thank you.
Agreed.
My question is, I think they're called a bamboo. It's in a glass dish, and I have to keep water in it halfway all the time. Am I calling it the right thing? It's just a stick.
Yeah, it's usually called lucky bamboo, but it's actually a Dracaena.
Okay, well, I'm lucky because I'm keeping it alive.
there you go.
How I'm starting to feel sorry for it. I just add water. Should I drain it and start with fresh sometime?
What does the water look like? Is it all yellow and brown and ugly? Or
no. Nope, it's still clear.
Smell it. If it smells swampy, I would dump, rinse, and refill with clean water, room temperature. But if it's all seems happy and fine, then don't worry about it. Don't mess with a good thing. You're lucky.
Thank you, Charlie. I don't mess with you. You're the good thing. Bye now.
Thanks so much, Jean. That might be a record, eh? Three times.
It is. Three times.
Back I hope, twice after the first call.
Yeah, I hope people have heard that. Three times she's gotten through today, and our lines have been full. So good on you, Jean.
Nice. Just a quick mention before we go to break. This was a tip you gave me, Charlie, and I'm faithful to this. And that is in our basement, we have a couple of dehumidifiers just keeping everything, you know, especially in the summer. And that is the water that I use routinely for my plants. I just pour that into a bucket and I take it and use it for any plants indoor and outdoor because it doesn't have the chlorination in it. And you've always suggested that it's better and it's automatically room temperature.
Exactly. And, you know, the only water that's better than your dehumidifier water would be aquarium water or rainwater.
Yeah, and we never thought of that, but after you commented on that, we always now throw the aquarium water, which we have when my wife does the change, we throw that in a bucket and put it on the gardens because you say it's like full of organic waste, which is great for the plants.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Save on fertilizer.
Yeah. Okay. We are going to go to our last break, and we'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back. And let's go to our next caller. We have Daryl on the line from Georgetown. And Daryl is another first-time caller. How are you, Daryl?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning.
Good. I'm gonna give you your garden wings, my friend. There you
Morning.
Go.
Welcome Delighted to the show.
To have you aboard. Yeah, what do you got for Charlie?
Well, hopefully you can hear me. My reception seems to be choppy at the moment. But my question is about an autumn maple I have in my backyard, which is a small backyard. And it, unfortunately, is growing quite well to get a little bit overgrown. And I've aggressively trimmed it on and off for, it's been there for 15 years. And now I'm wondering if it's going to be a problem because I understand they grow by about to about 80 feet tall by about 40 feet wide. You know, eventually I'm going to have to get rid of it, and maybe I should just do that now instead of kind of keep trimming it.
Right.
What would your advice be?
Yes, it can be challenging to have to always keep trimming, but you're trying to keep it within your small backyard. You don't want it going over to the neighbors?
The neighbors don't seem to mind.
You know what? Personally, if I like, number one, it's a beautiful tree. Like an autumn blaze maple is a beautiful tree in the fall, but it's also just a beautiful tree anyway. If you've had it for 15 years, it's, you know, that's a pretty good investment in your landscape and in the environment that it's creating with the shade, etc. I would do two things. Number one, I would accept that it's going to be a big tree. I would probably bring in an arborist. I'd have an arborist on speed dial, and every 5 years I would call the arborist, get the arborist to come in and do a proper thinning on the tree because they tend to get very dense. And when they're very dense, then you've got really, really dark shade beneath it. And then it's just nothing grows. It's just so dark. So you want some thinning of the canopy, but you have to let the tree spread the way it needs to go wide and it has to go tall. But if there's no hydro lines above and if the neighbors don't mind, why not just let it do its thing? I mean, I've been in situations where Norway maples were very popular 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and they're planted all over the GTA. And I've been in a situation where I saw one Norway maple. It covered like four backyards, but it had been allowed to do that to achieve its size and its spread. And, you know, nobody was cutting it off at the property line. And it was very beautiful. It was a very beautiful tree. So maybe just let it be itself, but do allow some light in at the same time so you're not too dark underneath.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I will bring in an arborist, I think. It is also very close to the back fence, which is only about 10 feet away from a neighbor's wall. So,
I see. So it's very close to a wall then. Okay. Well, Yeah, I mean, yes, I would bring in a professional if you can, just for even just to ask and say, what do you think I should do? Should I replace this tree to give it up? Or is there some way we can work with where it is? Because, you know, why take down? I bet you the birds will really miss it if you take it down, and not to mention all the carbon dioxide it's doing a really good job looking after. So, you know, I'm just, if you can keep it, I would try and keep it.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Daryl. We're going to try and squeeze in one more call before we have to finish up. Let's go to Eva in Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Eva.
Yes. I planted an apple tree a few years ago where I was living, and there came a high hill around it and pushed the tree up. And I would like to know, why is this and what could you do about it?
Okay, wait, so how did the hill get created?
It just came from the garden and pushed itself up to the to the apple tree and pushed the apple tree up all around it like a big anthill, really high. I have seen it on other trees too when I was walking, going for a walk. I don't know why that is. What could be done about it? You know, what could you do? I didn't know what to do at that time.
Right. So, okay, so it sounds to me like a large anthill, like it's an ant home, has been created near your tree. So remember, the ants will not eat the tree. Ants don't eat living things. They only eat dead stuff, which is one of the reasons we actually really should appreciate ants, because they do, they're cleaners, right? They're always cleaning up the environment for us, cleaning up the dead stuff. However, when they're making their home and they're making all those little tunnels, they will underground expose roots to the air, because in their tunnels, they're laying eggs, et cetera. And ultimately, plants with anthills at the base of them will sometimes die just because of the environment that the ants create around the roots. So what I would do, you're not going to kill the ants, but I would get out a shovel and I would see if I can dig into that anthill, opening it up, exposing the ants, exposing the tunnels, exposing the eggs, et cetera, that are in there. At that point, if you want to use an ant killer spray, you can, or boiling water or cinnamon. There's a few things you can do that will make the ants very unhappy, and they will grab the eggs and grab the babies and they'll move. And that's the best you can do, is move the ants somewhere else. You're never going to kill them all, and don't even try. But if you can move them to somewhere else, like preferably the neighbors, really, then you're good. You're good. You know, the ants are fine and your tree is also fine. And that's usually what I try and do with ants, is just move, like play rawhide, you know, move them on and just let them do their thing, but somewhere that it's not going to interfere with your tree. All right.
Okay. Thanks for the call there, Eva. And wow, we are, as you always say, Charlie, we're almost out of racetrack.
I know.
Yeah.
How'd that happen? Wow, that was a busy hour.
Indeed. Yeah. What do you got planned? Have you got anything that you're running out to do today?
Yes, indeedy. Well, you know, last week I mentioned we were doing a little garden renovation, and it was so hot last week, we haven't finished that. We got a good start, but we've got a little more work to do to get that sorted out. It's we've removed an awful lot of sod, that because the lawn is so vigorous, it's just been growing right into the gardens. And we've done a lot of work there. We've just got the edging to install, and then I'll be calling in for a truckload of triple mix to replace what we've taken out and move some plants around. And then I'm good to go in that garden, and we'll move on to another project.
Excellent. Yeah, we've got a bit of digging to do ourselves today. But a good day, as you say, a good day to do it temperature-wise.
Yes, exactly. You wouldn't believe how many popsicles I ate last week. Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Ashley. Thanks to all those great callers. Keep those questions coming. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.